Welcome to the audio play of In Their Footsteps. In Their Footsteps takes five oral histories of five American women who served in the Vietnam War and uses that text to create the script. All the words that you will hear tonight come from those oral histories and are stories that come directly from each of these women. This documentary theater piece has performed at the Crane Theater under St. Mark's and was set to go on a two-week tour in Italy this November. And now this play is being transformed for the first time ever into an audio play. The cast recorded all of their audio parts separately because of the coronavirus pandemic. Infinite Variety Productions, IVP for short, is a registered 501c3 theater company dedicated to spotlighting women who have gone unnoticed throughout history and demanding awareness of women's roles in historical, current, and possible events. 50 years ago, thousands of young American women went to Vietnam to serve their country, but their stories have remained largely untold. This play is based on the oral histories of two military officers and three civilian employees.
Ann Kelsey, librarian.
Judy Jenkins Gaudino, recreation.
Jean Sam Christie, donut dolly.
Doris Lucky Allen, Women's Army Corps, intelligence specialist. Lucky is African American.
Lily Adams, army nurse. Lily is half Italian and half Chinese.
And without further ado, sit back and enjoy the audio play of In Their Footsteps.
I remember going to the PX, the post exchange military store, to see if they had Tampax.
But if they did show up at the PX, the men would just grab them.
Yes, the guys used them to clean their guns.
Well, they were really excellent for cleaning M16s. For the barrels of the M16.
Well, I also remember the PX because of... It was Joni Fowler from Nha Trang that I went to the PX with. And I was following her up to the checkout, and there were these gold coins in a bucket right next to the register. Oh, chocolates! To me, growing up in Wisconsin, gold coins were chocolate coins. Well, at the PX, they were... condoms. They were condoms. Joni was so embarrassed, but, you know, to this day, it still makes me laugh to think about, oh, chocolates. I had no idea back then. Lots of stories.
I go and talk to high school students about my time there. They listen. Well, at least I don't see any of them dozing off.
That's a good thing. I mean, when I went, I had no frame of reference. I didn't have a clue what to expect in Vietnam. At the time, I had a job in Kalamazoo, Michigan, to be a teacher. I didn't want to teach in Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Oh, I have to use the bathroom.
I knew there must be something more out there. Well, at work, I would go from our floor down to the basement. And there was this woman at work, and I'd pass her office every day, and she always had this wonderful tweed suit on. I thought, one of these days, I'm just going to stop and tell her how pretty that suit is.
Oh, thank you.
Turned out we became good friends. She helped me a lot.
I pulled some information about the Red Cross. Found this.
We submitted a bunch of applications. The Red Cross wrote back. Then they sent me to St. Louis for another set of interviews.
Squat. On the floor. I want to see if you're flexible enough.
Wasn't that strange? That was very strange. Well, I was born with polio, and I guess they were looking for people who could walk and talk. And silly enough to say, yeah, I'll go to Vietnam. So when they finally called and said...
Do you want to go?
Yeah, sure. It's warm. I had no idea what to expect.
Yeah, I mean, I was hired by mail. I filled out an SF-80, the standard government application form, mailed it in, and then I got the standard Vietnam handbook, which was mailed to me as well. After I talked to the recruiters, I didn't see another human being again until I got to Saigon. I was so excited, though. I just kept thinking, oh boy, I've never done anything like this before.
I thought I was on the right track. Before NAMM, I was working at Fort Ord in Salinas, California, and a lot of the men I took care of there were traumatized by the war, and 4 orthopedic wards, 30 patients per ward. Some were injured in Vietnam. They had these nightmares. Those guys, the Vietnam returnees, screamed at night. I'd try to sit and talk to them, but I felt guilty that the girls didn't have to worry about getting drafted, and the boys did. So when I was told I was going to Vietnam, I...
We tried to keep you, but the Army Surgeon General said that they needed nurses so badly, I couldn't.
I thought this was the least I can do for the men.
I thought I could really help the men there, too. The GIs, I mean. Because at the time, I was working with delinquents, and my teacher said, if you can work well with delinquents, then you'll be great with GIs. Oh, but I don't think she'd like me to say that in front of the GIs. I mean, I was interning at a state reformatory for delinquent girls. I would organize recreational activities for them. I was really able to get through to them. My teacher, who had worked with Army Special Services in Europe and Korea, said,
if you can work well with delinquents, you'd be great with GIs.
So I signed up for Germany, and I had visions of skiing in Switzerland on the weekend.
Well, I'm sorry, but Europe is filled. We're sending you to Vietnam.
I didn't really know if I wanted to go to Vietnam.
Oh.
It'll be just like Korea.
No, in Korea, the women were safe. We were not.
Well, even if something did happen, we had our white cards. Geneva Convention cards. One side written in English and the other side Vietnamese. If you were ever captured, you just held them up, right? I had no idea that wouldn't work. I'd never been exposed to war, so...
I had already served in the Korean War when I found out that some women were going to Vietnam and said, I want to go. Still, I had no preconceived notions of what to expect of Vietnam. But that was okay because, you see, my family, we were all black, but my mother was accused of being Caucasian. And I remember one time my sister and I were walking down the streets of El Paso, holding hands with our mother, and this white woman...
What's that white woman doing walking along with those two little
And my mother looked at her and moved right along. So I knew then, now and in Vietnam, who I am. As long as I knew who I was and who I am, that's all that mattered. And even if things happen, God has me, so it'll be okay. I joined.
I went to Oakland, where there's a military base with an airstrip.
It was late at night when I left from this huge hangar that was packed with guys. I didn't see any other women. Just me, all these guys, and that costume.
Oh, right. The proper attire we needed to travel in. We had to wear a girdle.
Yes, that quote-unquote uniform. Straight skirt, suit jacket, hose, pumps, gloves, hat.
Ugh, and stockings with garters. And the garters would just dig into the back of your thigh. Ugh, unbelievable. On a 22-hour flight.
August 30th, 1969. The day I left.
It was January of 1967 when I left.
September of 1967.
October of 67.
October 1969.
So many years ago. Can y'all believe that?
Please buckle your seatbelt and prepare for takeoff. Welcome to Vietnam.
We land at night with no lights. And they opened the door, and the first impression was just the ugh, of heat coming in, They take the ladies off first, then the military starts yelling at the guys. I learned quickly that's how they do things here.
We get our luggage, get on a bus, and as we drive away, oh, I see a little Vietnamese boy giving us the finger.
My transportation to the hotel was in a truck with barbed wire around all of the back.
So that if anyone throws a grenade, it will bounce off.
We got to the Meyercord Hotel, and it had wide tape in X's across all of the windows.
In case there are any bombs or rockets that come close. Boom!
It would supposedly help protect us from the shattering glass. That's not terribly reassuring. So this other woman and I, we were kind of clinging to each other, and we were in line to get hamburgers at this little place at the lower level of the hotel. And there were a couple of Air Force pilots behind us.
Are you new to the country?
That's an understatement.
Forget about the hamburgers. We are going to take you out on the town.
Wow. Where are we?
The rooftop at the Caravelle Hotel. See the flares over there in the distance? Helps the guards to see if there are any snipers trying to sneak in.
Oh, it looks so romantic. First day there, and we were sipping a little wine and thinking, this is unbelievable.
Oh, gosh. My first night there.
On the front steps, newbie.
Jean, you were picked to be on guard duty tonight?
Give her your whistle.
Of course. Here you go. Just in case you hear any VC coming.
Blow it really loud.
The VC? They're right next door?
Uh-huh. Here's a steel bucket.
A pot. For your head.
And they let me sit out there for a couple of hours. I wouldn't have known a VC if he sat on my lap at that point. They laughed and giggled. My first night. That kind of set the tone. That kind of set the tone.
Well, my first encounter in Vietnam? Big roaches in the shower. Which is how showers were in Vietnam.
And in the mornings, you had to shake out your shoes in case there was a scorpion in it.
Yeah. And I thought, oh, I really just want to go to sleep. Well, the next day, one of the librarians picked me up and took me to the Army Library. You know, people are always fascinated that there were librarians in Vietnam. That there were libraries in Vietnam. Being a librarian in a war zone was no different than when I was in a community college in Jersey. Just a place where the enlisted men could go and be cool. Literally cool. Because it was the only place with air conditioning. I remember the library in Cameron, especially. Cameron was a transportation hub, and the guys would take a convoy out, bring it back, and then they would sit until the next one was ready to go. So they would have a lot of downtime. And it was all guys. So I learned I was not going to have big business and novels.
Do you need a little help finding something to read?
Huh?
That was really the purpose of all of this morale and recreation. The whole idea was to keep these guys out of trouble. And the guys paid attention.
What's a nice girl like you doing in a place like this?
What the heck are you doing
and
here?
Being in a library?
Okay. But most of them were familiar with libraries, and I acted like a librarian. So they looked at me differently than they looked at the women who worked in the service clubs, who were there to play games with them, to talk to them, to...
It was so much more than that. The special services had rec centers that were open from 10 in the morning until 10 at night. And sometimes we had as many as 500 soldiers come in just one day. The fellas just wanted a quiet place to get away from the war.
Man, if I've told
they
you
could
once,
play cards
a thousand times.
Oh, guys. As long as they were quiet. Oh, and we had some musical instruments. And if the guys sounded pretty good, we would organize them into a soldier show. Sometimes this GI would come in and sit down at the piano and play Mozart. People who were drafted were anywhere from high school dropouts to those who had their PhDs in physics. So we had a mixture for this war because of the draft. In fact, one time I had this fella come in and he had this battered canvas gym bag, holes all punched in it. And he comes up to me and says,
"I'd like to donate my services. I'm a magician."
There are pigeons inside? Trained pigeons? You just arrived. Just went the whole flight, had it under your seat, and nobody knew that you had live pigeons in your bag? Let's put on a show! I'll be your assistant. He has this little velvet box that he'll take the pigeons and put them inside. And, well, there's an elastic little pouch that'll become flat and then collapse so it has enough room so it won't hurt the birds. And then he made them disappear!
Thank you! Thank you! Thank you very much. Now, for my next...
I was able to transfer him from infantry into a medical position. And it just might have saved his life, because most guys that went straight into infantry, well, they probably... I never heard from that guy again, but I liked my role in organizing that little scenario. It was so much more than that.
I mean, I had no idea back then. I mean, I knew about the social workers, only because in Vietnam we worked right next to each other. But the other women, like the donut dollies, I didn't know what these people did. I didn't even know they were called donut dollies. I only knew they were Red Cross because they had the Red Cross patch.
Donut dollies. Donut dollies were carried over from World War II, where they really served donuts. It's too hot in Vietnam to serve donuts. If I say it was psychological health and welfare, it makes much more sense for people. We were civilian employees, like Judy and Anne. We did, they called it fun and games. They called it suppliant recreational activities overseas. Say that in a light blue dress, with the sun shining through you in front of thousands of guys. We were taught to go out and to talk, to engage the men. We'll spend most of our time out in the field. Jeep, boat, helicopter, do simple things. Don't sit face to face, sit next to them. And when the men are in conflict, don't confront them. Sit next to them, let them talk. Our job is to get them to talk. Hi. How are you? Where are you from? Can I get you anything?
I just want a copy of Stars and Stripes to see whom my unit's been killed.
At the end of the day, if we have time, we're asked to go to the hospitals. I'd walk into the ward, and these guys are just blown to bits. I can smell them.
Don't come in here.
I'm glad the nurses watch out for us, but donut dollies, we're the happy ones. Hi. How are you today? Where'd you get all that black pepper?
Oh, it's shrapnel.
You laughed. I mean, you do. You look like you have black pepper all over you, right? And that would be the end of our day. We'd go back home, write reports, go to dinner, and then tomorrow, do it all over again. Our job was to get them to laugh, and then we'd leave. The nurse's job was to heal them.
My job in Vietnam was to take care of my patients.
You'll be taking care of GIs and POWs, ARVNs. That's South Vietnamese.
Vietnamese? I didn't know I was going to take care
you
of...
You will take care of people with injuries, such as... And children.
With no legs, she...
Doctor?
Excuse me.
It's smallpox. Yes, smallpox.
Smallpox?
Nurse.
Right. I worked with burns, belly wounds, chest wounds, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, sometimes more than that. But taking care of them, that's all that mattered to me.
You had to keep doing your job, whatever it was. I was part of the Women's Army Corps, which, like the Army nurses, was also military. The Women's Army Corps had clerks, secretaries, women in medics, some in finance, mostly administrative jobs that women do. I was in charge of intelligence in the Army Operations Center. My job is to put all the information together from the captured enemy documents that come to my desk and then write reports for the board. The only woman in the intelligence room. You either do your job or you don't. It's up to me to do my job. And I don't care what people think about me.
Yes. Like on Christmas.
Right! Holidays! Where we put up a Hanukkah menorah, if we could find them. Or a Christmas tree, if we could find that. Those were about the only two religions we could celebrate at that point.
But Christmas? 1967? I was there. I wanted to do something very special for the poor guys who were isolated in the guard towers on Christmas Eve. So, the Santa Claus suit. The Santa Claus suit. I'll make stockings of gum and candy and cigarettes, because you have to add cigarettes, because that's what the guys really want. And I'll stop at each guard tower. Merry Christmas! Ho, ho, ho! The next day, the base commander calls me into his office.
Do you realize what a target you were for a sniper?
Out there with that white trim on your suit.
From the Santa Claus suit.
That was the dumbest thing.
It really was the dumbest thing. I never thought about being shot by a sniper. All I could think of was that I wanted to bring a little Christmas cheer to those guys. Oh, Christmas.
It's the best thing you could have done on that day. On Christmas, I would just go to my ward. I wasn't on duty, I didn't have my uniform on, but I went to the burn unit ward, and one of the patients said,
"What are you doing here? You aren't on duty."
"Where else am I going to go? Home?"
"What's your name?"
"You know my name, nurse."
"No. Your first name."
"I don't tell my patients my first name."
"Please."
"You can't tell anyone else my name."
"I won't."
"Lily."
"I promise. I'll never tell."
And he never did.
Christmas. I remember the holidays. Because of the Bob Hope show. And a kiss on top of the hill. I didn't like the Bob Hope show then. Still don't. But still, I wanted a seat front and center for the show. I'm still pretty neat after the 2-hour show. So, maybe I'll walk a bit. All the way up the steps to the top room of the amphitheater. Look at the faces of the troops. Sad. Maybe because the show is over. Some happy just to see the show, and others just tired from sitting so long in the hot sun. And me? Oh, I have so many mixed emotions. There, on top of the hill, a young man, sweaty, black, no more than 19. Nobody loves him. Psst. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Whoa.
And that was the kiss at the top of the hill.
In the field, though, the Donadalis all quickly learned to never touch a soldier. It was fun for the men to have women around, but they didn't touch us. We didn't touch them. It could start a riot, you know? But we still had fun. Go places you weren't, you know. You're not supposed to go.
Yes. One time, I took my jeep to a different part of town. You split all of my tires?
Oh, I just wanted you to be around.
Just wanted me to be around for a while.
Well, like you said, they were just happy to see women being, you know, American women. It was a big deal. I mean, I heard about harassments, but none of it happened at the base I was at.
But we always knew we had to be careful. I was driving one day, and there was an MP walking, and I stopped to pick him up, only because he was an MP. U.S. Army? Want a ride?
Sure. Thank you.
You're welcome.
But don't you ever do that again. You do not pick up anybody.
I never will. After that, the only people I picked up were women.
If you put on a professional demeanor and attitude, pretty soon they would see that you were not an available female for them. Then it was like having 500 big brothers. I remember I had this card in the library that I was stationed at, and it said, "Take a book to bed instead."
No. One time, a little boy, that's what he was, walked over to my desk. I was standing because I always like to keep my uniform nice and neat. I was standing and kind of leaning over, and he had the nerve, gall, and audacity to pinch my... You shouldn't have done that. I'll catch up with him.
Ooh!
You're turning all red. If you ever touch me again, you'll be dead.
It was a war zone. And yes, there were instances. There was harassment. There was voyeurism. There were break-ins, there were assaults, there were... But it was a war zone, and you did the best you could. You kept going.
What about Lynn Allen? Jean, you were there with Lynn, right?
Yes, but do I want to talk about it? Not really.
She was shot to death by a boyfriend that she had just broken up with. And what about Virginia? Ginny Kirsch. I heard about her a few weeks before I left. Attacked by a soldier who was probably high on drugs. He stabbed her to death, and he was never even charged with that crime. And it wasn't until he was in prison, years later, with a different crime, that he acknowledged that he killed Ginny Kirsch.
There was another woman who was stabbed. My friend Pat was a director that went in and opened the unit again after she was stabbed. You kept on. You just kept going.
Just a hostile work environment?
It wasn't just from the military men.
Are you aware that the VC we picked up has pictures of you girls?
Well, they take a picture, pick you off one by one.
Kidnap you. Then kill you.
How else to demoralize the troops? Kill off their women.
Things happened.
I had a Viet Cong with scissors at my neck. For the first few months I was there, everything was very quiet. I went over there in September of 1967, and the Tet Offensive, it took place in February of 1968. One of the girls that I was working with was opening up a club about 10 miles outside of Quy Nhon, so I went with her. And Tet took place. We are isolated with a trucking unit and literally have lived in this bunker for almost a week. Quy Nhon is one of the areas that's overrun by the Viet Cong. The Viet Cong are broadcasting from the radio station saying, the city is taken. We are in danger of being overrun. No. The fellas, they taught me how to shoot. So if we get overrun, then I'm just going to shoot back. I'm going to save the last bullet for myself. I had my hair cut, the week before, by a Vietnamese barber who was helping on the base. He was one of the sapper attackers that I saw dead right after the attack. I had a Viet Cong with scissors at my neck. That really played on my mind. After that, I stayed longer in Quy Nhon and in Vietnam. Although I signed up for 1 year, I stayed for 3. The boys here, I mean, there, they needed me.
I stayed for 3 years. Even after I put out the biggest report 30 days prior to the Tet Offensive, saying that there was gonna be a really big attack and the Viet Cong were gonna come in big numbers. And the men there didn't take it right. And it happened. And lots of people died because they didn't listen to me. I still don't know if it was because I was Black, Women's Army Corps, or just woman. A year further, a whole year further, I reported we were about to have another attack. And women don't go down to the Second Field Force, period. But I did. I went down there and stood before the board.
So it's not just about sprinkling those magic words.
They are around our perimeter. There are some 22 millimeter rockets, 122 millimeter rockets around our perimeter. This is going to happen.
And so it's not just about sprinkling those magic words, but also
you
finding out.
You got to do something about it. This is going to happen. You have to. I would have normally turned around and given up on it. But I had to bring myself into it and say, I am gonna die. I'm going to die. I don't want to die. And I thought about my daddy. When the kids at school said that I got little bird legs. And my daddy said,
"Baby, are you standing here by your daddy? All right. You're standing on your legs, right? That's all you need, baby."
So I stood on them. In Vietnam. And I stood there and cried. It hurts to cry in front of them, 'cause you know, here's this woman over here. And you know, women are, we're supposed to be. But tears come out like rain and it hurts me so bad. But still, Lucky, you stand there. And a few days later, they put out some duster fire and they got 4 secondary explosions. A couple days later, they put out some more fire. They got 117 secondary explosions up to 100 feet high. All the rockets were hidden. A whole lot of people would have died. And after that, I was just completely. So I went to the top of the bunker by myself and prayed. I ask you, God, to cleanse my mind of any bitterness and let me be kind to others, even if I believe that others weren't kind to me. And I knew God would answer.
I think one of the hardest parts there for me was the isolation. Where I was, there weren't any other women.
There were a bunch of women where I was. And some of the women clung to each other for support. In a place like that, you kind of had to. But me, I isolated. And although I was friendly, I didn't want to make friendships.
I mean, we worked 12 hours a day.
Yeah, but when I did have a day off, I went on the courier. The courier would leave every morning at 9 a.m. and go to Longbien?
On my day off, I would go to the laundromat. I would just go there and do it and sit. I just sat. No one ever bothers me.
It's just me, a co-pilot, and a pilot, and Led Zeppelin.
It's very quiet.
Make the volume high. I'm flying free and seeing the beauty of Vietnam.
Here, Vietnam could be quiet.
Because it truly is a beautiful country.
You had to find a way to keep moving forward, but it wasn't easy. I remember I was at the Marine Air Officers Club. It was the end of the night, bodies packed in there, hot and sweaty and everything else. It just stops. Every guy is singing God Bless America with so much heart and so much meaning. It had such an impact that night. But there was a very pivotal point for me. I was put in charge of the porters in Da Nang, the Vietnamese on the base. And this young Vietnamese boy, he was in charge of the checked guns. The Marines checked their guns when they came into the center. They knew you lose your gun, you cannot come back to your unit. Well, when guns started disappearing, I tried to explain to him what the problem was. These Marines live, breathe, eat, die, sleep with those guns. He does not. So I tried. I tried to work with him to explain. I brought in a North Vietnamese who had become an artist on our base. He spoke Vietnamese and English. I brought him to talk to the boy, but I'm still not sure if it did. I knew I had to turn him in. But I could have told him not to come to work the next day. I could have, but I didn't. He came to work the next day. We took him over and turned him in. Guns are disappearing.
Don't get boy.
I have to turn you in.
Don't get boy.
Why did I turn him in? I had no proof. Why did I do it? Because the military told me to do it. I started questioning everything. We were doing a lot of damage to Vietnam and to the Vietnamese people. I knew at that point that it wasn't the picture I saw when I first got there. I began to question and say, is this right? Why are we here? After that incident, my perspective changed. God bless America. It took me years before I could sing that song again.
Before I went to Nam, I supported it. I believed what the government was saying about why we were in Vietnam. The whole shtick. I learned quickly that we should not be there. Soldiers clear the villages out, supposedly for the Vietnamese's own protection. But by doing this, they are ripping the fabric of the whole Vietnamese family structure. There are all these Vietnamese literally living in cardboard boxes on the streets of Saigon because they have nowhere else to go.
The government didn't care about the people they hurt. In Vietnam, I worked in two areas, ICU and triage. And in triage, these two Vietnamese children came in, brothers. One was 5 and one was 7. The Vietnamese feel more comfortable being around me, which is helpful. Especially the children. They aren't so freaked out when I need to touch them. Because, you know, I look like them. They both need surgery and... What did you say to him? Our parents are dead? He's only 7. And he's going to have to take care of his 5-year-old brother for the rest of his life. I felt like shit. And it was all because of us.
No! It was the policymakers in America. They lied to us. I mean, it was terrible how they handled the war, both in Vietnam and back home. I mean, I remember sitting and listening to military radio and...
There it is. President Nixon stating that we are not invading Cambodia.
Come and shut the library. The whole brigade is leaving. We are convoying out to Cambodia.
I never believed a politician again.
It is now known that Nixon did in fact authorize the invasion of Cambodia, and protests ensued today, May 4th, 1970, in Kent State, Ohio, which resulted in 3 students being killed and several others wounded after they called out the National Guard, who fired into the crowds to, quote, control the protests, end quote.
Almost all of the other women were extending for another 6 to 10 months. I'm done.
I was tired. Tired from Vietnam.
I'm resigning.
I remember when I was leaving thinking, I'm not going to re-up, so why am I crying? It's time for me to move on.
I'm going to Japan for a month.
I don't want to go back to New York. I want to go to San Francisco and start a life.
Those boys will always be my boys. But
I didn't want to leave.
For me, it was just time to go.
I wanted out. One of my good friends is at McChord Air Base in Washington. And he told me, on your way home, come and see me, we'll go fly. It's highly illegal to fly, but I love to fly.
A lot of women were traveling when I left, and I thought, I want to travel to other parts of Asia, so I will.
I do not want to go back to Fort Bragg. I'll just walk in there and tell them I want to go to Presidio, San Francisco. Instead of sending me there, you're sending me to Fort Holabird in Maryland? That base is closing, and they are sending me to Arizona. I am going to go to Germany for 2 years, then I guess I'll come home?
But home feels so alien.
I'm at home. and I'm ready to escape again. I do not like it.
I am back in the States just before Christmas, and it feels like I've aged 20 years. I didn't have anything in common with any of the other people.
Do not like the people.
Why do you talk about Vietnam so much?
Do not like the attitude.
Or why were you stupid enough to be a part of such an awful war?
Do not like this country.
Or that's the war that we lost, right?
When I was back home, I was doing an investigation of this young man, a black guy who had the biggest white Cadillac. The lieutenant, a white guy, asked me to do the investigation because the guy, the black guy, was about to get another job, a higher rank.
Everyone at home would get this glazed look in their eyes when I started talking about Vietnam.
Then I saw that the lieutenant, the white guy, had the same white Cadillac, the same model, everything. And I realized that the white guy was just pissed off that this black boy had a car just like he had.
In Vietnam, everyone worked together, utilized everyone's skill set, but at home and at work.
I told him that I didn't think he should be investigated, and he just said, "This is your assignment."
Everyone just wants to show how much better they were than you at hospitals back home.
Eventually, I came back. I married my husband, started a family.
I could not sit there and actually write that report.
Nobody was interested.
I went to see some close friends from school, and they were married and having babies, and they expect you to be the same. And I thought, what am I doing here?
I am out of that hospital.
We were chastised.
I did not want anybody to make any mistake of what I was saying.
I learned not to talk about
it. It was easier not to talk about it.
To not say anything.
That's when I started writing my book. Do you think I'm angry? Because f*** you, white man. I do the job and the white man gets the promotion. I put out all this good information and the white man gets the glory. And I wasn't looking for appreciation, but...
Sometimes I can tell these stories.
I talk about everything.
Other times I can't.
I don't have much.
And then
I have these dreams. Nightmares.
The whole thing comes crashing down.
Dreams of convoys being destroyed. Of my friends in ambush. Sitting there helplessly as they listen to the whistle sounds of the 120-millimeter rockets blazing towards their huts.
My girls, the littlest one, will come up to me. And all I can see is that kid in Da Nang screaming and clawing at me.
Well, fireworks, I guess, I can't really handle fireworks.
When I dream...
On the 4th of July, New Year's, fireworks,
I turned him in, the kid, and he was probably... No. It's not him. It's not.
I dream of people killing me and me killing them.
I just close all of the curtains and I put on the iPod or an iPad so I don't have to see and I don't have to hear anything.
I tell myself, it's just a dream. It's not real.
It's just the kids. My kids.
Yes. I also wanted Vietnam out of my brain. I wanted to move on. But then... I learned about Agent Orange, and I f***ing lost it.
Agent Orange was everywhere. It was designed to defoliate and make the area less vulnerable to the enemy sappers. Cleared off a big piece of land.
But it also caused cancer. The strange stuff that's happening with our bodies.
Agent Orange lives within the cells. It manifests.
One of my good friends died from it. She had all these welts and bad things happening to her. She didn't know that it was...
Agent Orange! How could the government use this stuff?
They denied Agent Orange for so long.
It's why I lost a set of twins. And my son has a birth defect. He almost died on me twice. And there are Vietnam vets still dying from Agent Orange today.
And the civilian employees for the military? Well, when we came home, we had no connection to any kind of veteran services.
So we can't get tested. We have no evidence, because we are not military. They knew we were there.
We all drank the water. All ate the food. All of it sprayed with Agent Orange.
But we can't verify it. We're not military. And we'll die that way, never being military. And we are dying off, so if they wait long enough, they won't even have to worry. Even the Red Cross denied us access to the first march. They had a float and 2 donut dollies on it, and that was all. We don't need the rest of you marching in the parade. You should go with your state. I said, excuse me. I didn't work for the state. I worked for the Red Cross. But 6 of us showed up for the march. We were so nervous and they made it so difficult for us, but we linked arms and we started in front of the parade, in front of the Red Cross. And as soon as we walked into the route, we heard, donut dollies, yeah!
I remember that morning. I was in the parade, and men were just charging into the parade. Come up to us. Were you girls nurses in Vietnam? Yeah, we were. Oh, can I give you girls hugs? Yes, of course! So, ordinary citizens didn't welcome us home. We welcomed ourselves home. And that is where I met Lucky. All of a sudden, there was this women's group there. There was a WAC group. WAC, Women's Army Corps. And there was Lucky.
I didn't know about the welcome home parades. At all. I guess if I had heard about them, I just connected them to veterans, to military veterans, and that didn't have anything to do with me, so. But then I heard about the Vietnam Women's Memorial Project. I wanted to try to reconnect with people. And they had this sister search program. So I wrote a letter looking for people who worked for special services. And that's when I found out that Judy lived 5 minutes away. We went to the wall together to lay down a special services wreath.
I thought I wouldn't like the Vietnam Wall. Because of the way that they talked about it. Like, it was a dark gash underground. But, yes, when I saw it, it was beautiful. What a great way to honor those who gave their lives.
2,000. 2,000 of those names on that wall belong to me. And 67 American women died in the Vietnam War.
But the Vietnam Wall holds the names of only 8.
And us? I hope that someone will find a newspaper article with my name in it. And I hope it says something nice. But thousands of women served in the Vietnam War, but there's no official list.
But I did it. And I was not afraid. Being a librarian was no different there than from when I was in a community college in New Jersey.
Yeah, you're there to help people read, to go to school, to find out things that they want to find out about. That's why you're there. And
you did your job.
And I did my job.
They would get this glazed look in their eye if I started talking about Vietnam.
Or they'd say, why do you talk about Vietnam so much? It was the most significant experience of my life. You know, it's with me forever. And it's so important to separate the war from the warrior.
Be all that you can be. If you want to go in the military,
so go and stay for 2 years or whatever and get out, but you will have satisfied that you have in you. It's yours, it's not theirs.
I mean, it was a long time ago. You didn't have to go.
You didn't have to, you know, and you wore stupid blue uniforms and you wore a girdle and you did all sorts of other things that people wouldn't do nowadays. And your life was on the line.
I hear a chopper
and I go back to Vietnam. Sometimes I go back to the hospital and other times I go back where I'm flying free with a couple of, co-pilot and the pilot and just seeing the beauty of Vietnam, because it was a beautiful country.
And then lastly, if there's anything else you'd want people to know about your time in Vietnam or just in your life.
No war is worth it.
Infinite Variety Productions gets its name from Shakespeare's play Antony and Cleopatra.
Antony's talking about Cleopatra and says age cannot wither her, nor custom stale her infinite variety. Us at IVP believe that women are made of various infinite varieties, and we hope to tell as many of those stories as we can.